From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois government has sunk to an even lower low. A crisis of confidence has never been more profound. We are here today to do more than just talk about the problem. We're here to say that something needs to be done immediately, specifically when we return to veto session next week in Springfield. Today, we have introduced a number of government reform bills that are a direct response to the wrongdoings we have learned from the current federal investigations.
Yeah, we need to look at comprehensive ethics reform in our state. And that's why what I've suggested is that with only 3 legislative days next week, we're not going to be able to get everything done that needs to get done. But we ought to begin. We ought to begin with some bills around transparency, making sure that we know what lobbyists are getting paid, making sure we know who lobbyists are representing. You know, you've seen that Representative Arroyo was a lobbyist, for other levels of government. I think that is challenging and problematic.
That's Governor J.B. Pritzker. And before that, we heard from the House Republican leader Jim Durkin. They're both talking about what they think the General Assembly should do in response to one of the now former members being charged with bribery. You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. And with me in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, an emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Joining us from the Capitol building is our Illinois Public Radio State House editor, Brian Mackey. And with him, Jamie Monks, our guest from the Chicago Tribune. Jamie, welcome back to State Week.
Thanks for having me.
And Jamie, why don't we go to you first? Governor, we heard him talking there. What's he wanting to see done here in the aftermath of all of these investigations we've been hearing about over the last few weeks? Governor weighing in now saying there's some action that needs to be taken.
Right. So Governor Pritzker has said that he really wants a lobbyist disclosure to be one of the first steps in addressing some of these allegations that we've seen specifically with Representative Luis Arroyo. But in addition to that, the governor is also calling for a more comprehensive reform package. So it's looking like the lobbyist disclosure and, creating more transparency around that is something immediate that he would like lawmakers to take up when they return to Springfield next week in the final days of the fall veto session. But then looking ahead to the spring, something bigger, more substantial to come. That's what he's pushing for this week.
Has he talked about what he wants to see that's more substantial, what he would be pushing for in a few months?
You know, we haven't seen a real specific proposal on that yet. At the same time, you have the Democratic legislative leaders talking about reform proposals as well. Last week, Senate President John Cullerton said that he wanted to look at convening a joint panel, Senate and House panel, where they would look at some larger ethics reforms as well, which is something that they did in the aftermath of the Blagojevich scandal. There's a lot of, push for reform, and I think a lot of people are kind of envisioning something more comprehensive beyond some of these things that address allegations that have come out recently. But as far as specifics and what that might look like next year, we don't have a lot of that right yet.
And Brian, going into an election year, I'm assuming that voting for some ethics changes could be an easy sell. I guess it depends on what they are.
Yeah, I mean, who likes lobbyists out there in the general public? I mean, I think those of us who work here in the building understand that, you know, the word lobbyist, when it's used in the public, people think of, you know, tobacco lobbyists or the oil companies and gambling interests who are just spread money around while lighting up cigars with $100 bills sort of thing. There are a lot of other lobbyists who work in this building for poor children, for people who have been victims of crimes, for elderly and disabled people. So, I mean, they're all different kinds of lobbyists, and there is some concern that painting them with this broad brush, creating these new disclosure requirements could hurt, especially some of the more independent and not huge moneyed lobbyists. I think it's also interesting that we're talking about, or the governor is talking about cracking down on lobbyists when, in fact, it was a lawmaker, not a lobbyist, who was arrested and accused of trying to bribe another lawmaker last week. So in one sense, there's a bit of misdirection at play here. And we heard, and I think we'll talk about a little later, the House Republicans coming forward with their own ethics package that, as opposed to what the governor has been talking about, would actually target lawmaker behavior, not necessarily just lobbyist behavior.
And Brian, I think a lot of people probably get a bit confused when they hear, Representative Arroyo was a lobbyist. I mean, they're thinking, well, wait a minute, what's that all about? Can you kind of explain that dual role that he was playing there?
Yeah, that is unusual, but not unheard of in Illinois. There are a number of these legislators, both at the state and at the local level, who are registered lobbyists for the other type of government. So he was registered in the city of Chicago to lobby the city council for interests that, and Jamie knows a lot more about this from reporting this week, but sweepstakes machines, which are maybe or maybe not a form of video gambling, depending. We can come back to that particular breakdown of how that works. But so he is lobbying the city council in Chicago. There's Cook County Commissioner Larry Suffredin comes to mind, who is, like I said, he's a county commissioner in Cook County. He has long been a state house lobbyist for other interests. Even people like Senate President John Cullerton himself has been a registered lobbyist with the city of Chicago. Now, some people will say their Chicago lobbying law is so broad that if you want to help someone with sort of routine bureaucracy, getting a building permit or something like that, it's safer to register as a lobbyist. They're not necessarily advocating for, policy changes as lobbyists. But, that is the sort of blurring you have of these lines and what, lawmakers still say is a citizen legislature. And so, people got to eat, I guess, the, 70-something thousand dollar salary that most of them make plus, can be supplemented with his outside income. And so some of them have chosen to do that through lobbying and trying to influence government.
I know, Charlie, you've watched a lot of this action through the years, and you've seen probably a lot of, as what Brian was saying, blurring of lines. Is this a good idea, what the governor's talking about, at least on its face?
To have elected officials mm-hmm. not lobbying other areas of government? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is. Now, I would draw the distinction between someone like Mayor Lightfoot saying, I want the General Assembly to do X, Y, or Z, which is legitimate interaction among governments, as opposed to Charlie Wheeler, who's a member of the legislature, getting paid, $10,000 to go and lobby the city of Chicago to do X, Y, or Z. I think the distinction is if you're advocating for a policy change at another government level and you're a government elected official at some other level of government, I think that's okay as long as there's no money involved.
Now, Jamie, of course, Republicans, as was mentioned earlier, have come out with their own package that they want to see passed. Of course, they have one big problem, and that is they don't hold majorities in the legislature, and it's going to be harder for them to move anything through on their own. I know they're aware of that, but are there some things in there that seem like they might have a bit of bipartisan agreement?
Potentially. One of the things that was raised last week, in keeping on this lobbying track here that we're talking about, was having a statewide database that it sounds like could be run through the Secretary of State's office, where every lobbyist for local governments, for state governments, you could go and you could find information in the same place. You've also, yesterday there was kind of a larger package that House Republicans put out there where they want to revise the statements of economic interests, have some more details there. So a number of things that they are proposing, also banning members of the General Assembly, spouses and immediate family members from doing paid lobbying work with local government units. So, you know, some of these things are proposals that have come up over the years and haven't gone anywhere. I think that there is a feeling that something needs to be done on both sides of the aisle. But, you know, we haven't heard anything really specifically from Democratic leaders that they are planning on taking up these proposals that the Republicans have put out yet. You know, so we've got kind of everybody is sort of working on their own proposal, floating their own proposal. And I think it's a big question what actually gets done and when it gets done.
And Charlie, what is the public, you think? What is the public's view of this type of stuff? Do they really, you know, every time I talk to somebody about ethics legislation or they're trying to do this at the Capitol, people just shake their head and like they'll find a way around it. You know, they don't buy into the fact that anybody's truly cleaning up government. Does it sell to the public if they're able to pass this type of stuff, even if it's needed, even if it's a good piece of legislation?
I think it depends on how well informed a person is. If somebody has the attitude, I'm not going to pay any attention to this, they're all crooks, you know, heck with them, you probably won't be able to convince that person that there's an honest effort to try and remedy these ills. On the other hand, if it's someone who follows government and says, yeah, this is a problem, and I'm glad to see the lawmakers addressing it, albeit it takes kind of a crisis to get them off the dime, then I think they will respond. And I know in my case, I look back at the history of every piece of ethics reform, and I've mentioned this on the show before, that has occurred in the General Assembly has always been in response to some crisis that made it, what would you say, more politically uncomfortable for the legislators to do nothing than for them to act. So I would expect we're very likely to see, for example, a ban on lobbying for pay by members of the General Assembly. I'd also like to see, and this is a recommendation that's been made by legislative inspectors generals for the last 10, 12 years, that the legislature has stricter economic disclosure rules, akin to what the Supreme Court has for justices and judges throughout the state. Those would be good steps, I think.
You know, it's interesting to hear Charlie talking about some of the, you know, crises that have led to ethics law changes in the past. And I think about, you know, for the three of us, not counting Jamie, who works for the Chicago Tribune, a private company, but three of us who work or have worked for the University of Illinois, we all have to do annual ethics training, like most anyone who works for state government. Governor Blagojevich was corrupt, and the result of that, or maybe it was even Governor Ryan who was corrupt, the result of that is thousands and thousands of people have to take this ethics training, much of which, I will say, has very little bearing on my job. I don't really do procurement or anything like that in my job as a State House reporter, yet I have to, you know, learn and understand about what those rules are in the law. So I wonder how many of those ethics changes that Charlie has seen had that, you know, direct bearing on the wrongdoing, or it's like, well, we need to look like we're doing something. Much like I was talking about, you know, now we're talking about targeting lobbyists, or at least the governor's talking about targeting lobbyists, while meanwhile, by definition, Representative Arroyo was arrested and accused of a federal crime that's already on the books called bribery.
Well, and Charlie, I'll let you weigh in on that, but I also would add to the fact that a lot of times legislation is passed after some event, you know, very reactive type of legislation that ends up creating more problems for people. And I would say some of the procurement laws, and I think many people in higher education would back me up on this, have become pretty onerous and make it difficult to get things done at times because somebody else did something wrong.
Yeah, I think the danger is in overreacting. And I guess to get to a philosophical point of view, the bad guys are always going to try and figure out a way around the laws or the rules. The good people, moral, ethical people, don't need those kind of rules. So you're reacting to the bad apples, and sometimes it causes problems for everybody else. But I go back to one of the very first things I covered for the Chicago Sun-Times was the Constitutional Convention way back in 1970. And one of the additions to the new Constitution, it was new back then, replacing the one from 1870, was a requirement for economic disclosure. And that was brought about because of a circumstance in which a couple of Supreme Court justices were receiving bank stock through an intermediary from a guy who had a case pending before the court. They wound up resigning. And as I say, the response was, well, we need more economic disclosure. And so that became part of the Constitution.
Before we move off of all of this, Jamie or Brian, whichever one of you want to weigh in, to go back to the former state representative, now resigned, Luis Arroyo, there was scrutiny of these sweepstakes machines. I believe Brian mentioned this earlier, and that raises some questions about potential for abuse as we see more expansion of gambling. Is that a concern for people going forward from what they've seen in this this latest government filing?
You know, so on the sweepstakes machines for a moment, they've really been kind of allowed to flourish in this gray area of the law. And admittedly, until all of this happened, I didn't know a ton about them. And they're very similar to video gambling machines, and they've popped up quite a bit in Chicago, where there is a ban on video gambling, and in other communities across the state. Critics will say it exploits a loophole in the law, and establishments that might not pass a background check through the gaming board are able to use these terminals and sort of offer offer this in their establishment. What we are seeing is a bit of a renewed push for either banning these or regulating them. And, you know, in some conversations that I had last week, I think that, some of these allegations around former Representative Arroyo and some of the other kind of ties to the gambling industry that we've seen pop up in subpoenas and search warrants, it does raise some questions around, will Illinois be able to kind of pull off this gambling expansion and not have these sort of unsavory elements enter into that? So I think that in speaking with one state representative last week, Kelly Cassidy, she essentially said that's what the regulations are for, the regulatory framework. There's always going to be folks who try to skirt the rules and get around them, and it's a matter of keeping up with that or keeping ahead of that and updating the rules to be able to do so.
So the lawmakers come back to town next week, the second week, final week of their veto session. We've already talked about some ethics legislation that could come up during those few days. Brian, what's some other things that lawmakers are pushing that people are watching?
Well, we're still waiting to see if the mayor is going to be able to push her agenda through for changing the tax structure of a Chicago casino and also changing the law to allow a progressive tax, essentially, on real estate sales. There was a sort of a revolt of certain Democrats, self-identified progressive Democrats, who say that they would vote against it unless the majority of that money went to fight homelessness. Lightfoot said, never going to happen, obviously. So that is something that still needs to be worked out. The governor said he was, still looking to the mayor to lead on that. So I don't know if, James, if you have any additional insight into that situation. It seems like something that we're still just kind of waiting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. And I think that this proposal was sort of facing an uphill battle anyway. But then you had this group of a dozen or so Democrats, Chicago area Democrats, saying that they weren't going to be on board with this unless it was going to a significant portion of the revenue was going to go towards addressing homelessness. And they said, look, the mayor campaigned on that. We are just you know, we want to keep our promise. We want her to keep her promise on that. So I think that in that case, you'd be a lot more reliant on suburban and downstate Democrats for votes. And I just don't know that she's going to get that.
Well, I thought one of the interesting things, weren't almost all of those, I think there were 13 of them, weren't almost all of them from the city?
Yes. Yes.
And so if you have city Democrats against the mayor's proposal, and I'm a suburban Democrat, no way in the world am I going to be for it.
And Brian, there's some other legislation that I know has been getting some attention as well.
Yeah, there were a number of things that passed either the House or the Senate in the first week of the session that lawmakers are hoping to be able to push through the other chamber in the second week. One is a $100 cap on the price of insulin for people who have insurance. So it doesn't affect everybody, but there are a lot of people out there who have seen their insulin, which is, do I need to explain that? That a drug for people who have diabetes. It helps control their blood glucose levels. And the cost of this has gone $400, $500, $600 a month in some cases. And there have been reports of people rationing this life-saving medication. And so there's this legislation that would cap the price of insulin, like I said, for people with certain types of insurance. It wouldn't be universal. And ultimately, Democrats say this is something that the federal government would have to really step in and resolve nationally to have a true universal price cap. But there is that sort of movement.
And then there was also some discussion about the NCAA, and this has gotten more national attention in recent weeks, but Illinois has its own bill that would allow athletes, student athletes, to profit off of their name and likeness being used.
Right. Yes. So Illinois, if they ultimately do approve this, would be the second state to do so following California. It essentially, the lead sponsor, Representative Welch, has said it would allow Illinois to remain competitive as far as recruiting goes. You know, a number of people are saying these institutions have been making money off of student athletes and lots of money at that, and they should be offered the same opportunity to profit. So we saw that pass the House last week, and it now goes to the Senate. Governor Pritzker is in favor of that. He held a news conference recently pushing for that.
Shirley, we've been – go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to add to what Jamie said, which I thought it was interesting timing. When that passed last week, the House held a hearing on it in the morning, and then a few hours later, we heard from the NCAA Board of Governors saying that it would begin moving in that direction, but it had this caveat, which is it'll do so in keeping with the principles of amateurism. And that led the Illinois sponsor, Jamie mentioned, Representative Chris Welch, to say, who himself, by the way, was a baseball player at Northwestern University, although not good enough to have, you know, rated endorsement deals, he says. But he said, you know, he called the NCAA's action a PR stunt. And from a lot of people who have been longtime critics of the entire system of colleges and the NCAA making a lot of money off athletes who basically get, you know, to go to classes and have housing as their payment, but not actually money as their payment for being in college sports. He called it a PR stunt. And a lot of the commentators who have been critical also sort of said that this is more show from the NCAA than a sincere change in direction.
And Charlie, I've heard also from some college presidents who've been quoted as saying, and especially I'm talking mid-sized colleges, smaller colleges, saying that this could really change the entire landscape, that a lot of these athletes are going to want to go to places where they can earn money off of their images and their names and things. And, you know, is that a concern for college athletics?
I suppose in a sense it could be, but on the other hand, I think it's a good idea because, as Brian noted, these universities, particularly the ones that have big-time football and basketball programs, are making millions, hundreds of millions of dollars collectively off their students. And so if I'm a, you know, this is a real stretch of the imagination, but let's say I was an All-American football player. why shouldn't I be able to get some money out of people using my image? Now, the legislation would say, well, if your school has a deal with Nike, you can't sign up with Adidas, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I think it's only fair. And people have pointed out students in other lines of extracurricular activities can make money on the side. If I'm in the university band, nothing stops me from having a side gig playing rock music at the local brew house. Mm-hmm.
Just about 30 seconds here. Brian, can you give me an update as well about something else the governor has been pushing for, and that is this downstate and suburban fire and police pension package? Are we going to see movement on that in the final few days of the veto session?
That's a good question, Sean. When this was first announced, just in principle, now there wasn't even legislation yet, right there at that news conference was an association representing firefighters. They were on board with this plan. But that is only half the equation. The other downstate and suburban pension funds that would be affected by this are those of police officers. And I have not, I don't know if Jamie's more up to date on this than I have. Last time I reported on this and checked, the police officers were still opposed. They were working, the people who support this, the governor's office and others were working with them to try and come to some kind of compromise so that everybody would be on board. And that's the last I heard of where things stand with this.
And we'll be watching all of that and then talking about it again next week. Let's go to our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we're starting into the month of November, so we have, again, from the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, J. Fred Geertz, professor, reporting that our flash index dropped a tad in October from the level it was in September. It's down 0.2%, but it's still above 100, which indicates growth, and the professor says the economy remains on a moderate growth path, while the national and world economies seem to be slowing.
Brian?
Yeah, I wanted to recommend a story that came out this week from ProPublica Illinois by Logan Jaffe. I think that's how you say the name. It was also published with The Atlantic magazine, big national magazine, about the town of Anna in southern Illinois. And it's sort of a narrow look at this town, but at a broader issue of what used to be called sundown towns, towns where African Americans were urged to not be there after dark. And it turns out, in reading this article, there were a lot of these places in Illinois. So even though Illinois was in the Union, we think of it as a northern state, just another example where we've seen where America's history of racism was plenty evident here. It's a really interesting article and a worthwhile read. It's called The Legend of Anna, and you can find it on The Atlantic's website.
And Jamie.
Yeah, I've got a kind of a fun one, not really a note from the field, but a note from Twitter. The Nisei Lounge, which is a watering hole in Chicago that has a pretty active Twitter presence, is pushing for the General Assembly to designate the Oxford comma as the official state comma in Illinois. For you grammar nerds out there, not sure they will get that done in veto session, but we'll see.
You should hire a lobbyist for that one. That's all the time we have for State Week. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Jamie Monks with the Chicago Tribune. Get a podcast of the show at nprillinois.org. Production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.